Welcome to the Connect You podcast, where we interview guests who have transformed their lives, whether in mind, body, health, or wealth. Connect You seeks to discover what drives people and makes them extraordinary. Brought to you by Lewis Jackson, who brings you exciting real-life stories, hot topics, and the truth.
All right, so on today's episode, we have Rob Mason, the serviced accommodation expert. He doesn't need an introduction. He's going to do that for us. But as you know, we love to take things back to the beginning. So, Rob, thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
So, Rob, take us back to the very beginning. What was it like for you growing up as a child?
So, going right back. So, I grew up in Yorkshire. We were there till I was about 13, 14. My dad was managing director of a big travel company, and several of his sort of managing director counterparts in other travel companies sort of died of heart attacks in a very short space of time, and he went, fuck this, let's go to Spain. So we sort of moved to Spain when I was about 13, 14, and spent the rest of my sort of childhood years there, which was just incredible. Costa del Sol, just, on the beach. I went to an English school there, which made things a lot easier, and then sort of progressed into working life there, where I was like, working in bars and restaurants and clubs and stuff. So it was sort of a varied childhood, I guess, which was cool. And it gives you a lot of life experience, I guess.
So what was it like, obviously, growing up in that environment, obviously abroad, in comparison to obviously growing up in the UK, which you didn't experience?
Yeah, I mean, it's a strange one, because I left everything behind and everyone I knew behind, and it sort of was a complete fresh start. But at the same time, it was new and exciting, and I'm always up for something new and exciting. I'm quite happy to travel and sort of put myself out of my comfort zone a little bit. So now it was awesome, you know, like growing up in 30 degree heat and shorts and t-shirt every day, and out there by about 15 you can get into a nightclub, so I sort of started a little bit early on the drinking scene. So yeah, it was an awful lot of fun, mate, an awful lot of fun.
What about your relationship with your parents as well?
Oh, that's a good one. It's varied. So when we're in England, great. When we're in Spain, pretty good for a while, and then the drinking and partying started, and then we fell out quite a bit. And as soon as he came back, I got some completely different view on them. I just my dad and I fought like cat and dog, and then when I moved back to the UK, and he offered me a job in the company he was working at, I saw a completely different side of him, and I found a whole new respect for him. And now we're like best mates. We got like drinking or racing or whatever all the time. So it's strange how that sort of transitioned.
Why do you think you see a different side of him in Spain?
I don't think it was him. I think it was me.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, I was just a bit of a tearaway. I was like I said, I was working in bars, so I'd sort of work sort of 4 till 11, 12, then straight out, like club until 5, 6 in the morning, sleep until 3, back to the bar at 4, and do it all again the next day. So I was just, I'd just been a teenager, I guess, and he didn't like it. And then came back, but it was a lot more responsible. I saw a different side to him, sort of working with his staff and stuff. And yeah, we just got closer and closer, and now like we're thick as thieves. Yeah, it's an interesting one. Really interesting.
So it seems like you've got a great bond with your dad.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think that you've got something to prove in a way to your dad, or especially due to the success you've had with your businesses? And we'll touch on them, no doubt. But the reason you moved to Spain was potentially because your dad having experienced his experience. Do you feel there was an added pressure there to prove yourself?
Yeah, I think to a degree. I mean, my dad's always been really successful. He's always been very successful in his career, and he's in his industry. He's sort of a bit of a stalwart, a bit of the guy that people know they can go to and shit's going to get done. But he's not always been a risk taker, and I think I've always wanted to prove that I could be a successful, but I've always wanted to be a bit more, take a few more risks and go out on my own. And actually it's his doing that I went down this route, because I was working in the travel industry, and I was working my fucking nuts off, and we were out one night and we were chatting away, and he was like, yeah, nobody gets rich in the travel industry though, unless they own the company. And I was like, fuck yeah, You're absolutely right. Yeah, people get a great living and they'll have a really good good career and they get to travel loads and stuff. The people who make the real money are the people that own the companies generally. And I was like, well, that's probably what I should do then. So he didn't realise what he'd done, but that's exactly what happened. No, it was a funny one actually. But yeah, I guess I'd never really thought of it that way, but yeah, probably a bit of something to prove.
So what did you do? Tell me, what were you after you've left school? What did you do after you left school in Spain?
So I had a few things going on. So I was working in several bars and nightclubs and stuff like that. Working in an Irish bar right opposite a strip club, as you do. After work one day, we went to the strip club and yeah, for the next 5 years, I was with a lap dancer. And so that transitioned into a business whereby we took some lap dancers onto like a private yacht and we hired it out for stag do's, which was great fun as like a 17, 18 year old. And we didn't get very many off. I think we probably only did two or three, but at the time, I think we were making like 1500 quid a go. And I was just like piling all these blokes on, all these girls on. And then I was going off to the bar and waiting for them all to come back with a big pile of cash in my hand, which as a 17, 18 year old's pretty good gig. So I did a bit of that. I started a business called Pocket Maps, where we sort of map of the local area. We sold the advertising to businesses to pay for the production. And then we sold the maps in shops on a sale return basis and made the money that way. So I did that for a little while. Yeah, and then I did some sales, some telesales. I briefly came back to the UK and lived in Brighton with a friend and did door-to-door sales for about 4 or 5 months. If you ever want a lesson in sales, try door-to-door, fuck me. It was such hard work, like knocking, I don't know, 150 houses a day, but you're doing like three times. So it's just relentless.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was one of the best jobs I ever had. Like everybody was so positive. If you weren't, you couldn't have done it. So that was a really good gig, not without its problems, getting doors slammed in your face, getting told where to go, piling through door after door after door in the pissing down rain. But I used to have a bit of fun with it and like knock on the door like soaked in a suit, knocked on the door and go, sorry, have you got any shampoo? I'm taking a shower out here. And they're like, what? And I was like, no, I'm not really. I'm trying to sell you something. So I used to have a lot of fun with it. And then when I came back to the UK, proper, when I came back to Cheltenham, I started working at the company my dad was at. They sold coach holidays, like cheap and cheerful, £99 weekends to Torquay and sort of Blackpool for 3 or 4 days with Blackpool nights and all that sort of stuff. Like, so yeah, so that was sort of the way my career sort of started. And then I went to from there to Abercrombie in Kent, which is like super luxury, complete opposite ends of the spectrum. We've gone from £99 for a weekend in Torquay to A&K. My biggest booking was £500,000 for 10 days. It was bonkers.
Shit.
Like private jets. And I remember the lady rang me and she was like, Rob, this is quite expensive, so it better be good. So I was like, it will be. A couple of days later, she rang. She was like, Rob, I just noticed there's a flight here for like an hour. It looks like we're on a plane with a lot of other people, like a normal plane. I was like, yeah, because it's just saved you 30 grand. She's like, Rob, just book a jet.
I was like, wow.
You got it. We'll spend the 30 grand.
You got a number still.
Yeah. Just a completely different world. And it was really interesting to see two different, complete opposite sides of the travel industry. And I was there for such a long time, five years maybe. And it was great. You're selling all these incredible products and you get to travel there. Like, I know once or twice a year, you might go out and stay in 5-star hotels somewhere in the world. Sometimes you get an upgrade to business class and all that sort of stuff. It was really cool. And everybody looked at me and went, Rob, that's the most amazing job in the world. Why would you want to do anything else? I was like, it's amazing. Like 1 or 2 weeks a year, the rest of the time you're just sat in the office. Which is why I decided to go out on my own. I was like, I've got to do something for me. And so I had a few different businesses, two main ones. So I started a company called Night Games, which is like Tough Mudder in the dark.
Okay.
So a 10-mile run at night. We'd have like fire pits to jump over. There was glow-in-the-dark paintball snipers hiding in the woods and stuff like that. It's like, it was intended to be absolutely epic, and we just didn't get there. It got to December, early December, been about 20 grand in the bank. The event was going to be 60 in February, March. So I was like, well, this at the moment isn't going to happen. So I looked at everything I could cut. I got it down to about 40 grand, and I was like, right, so I need to find 20 grand, but I'm going to have to spend it. I'm going to have to spend some to get some. So I piled the vast majority of the money into advertising between Christmas and New Year, thinking, New Year, new me, everybody sat around at home not doing anything, they're going to commit, and they didn't. And so all the money went into advertising, it paid back very little, and the company had to fold within weeks. A real lesson in testing things before you jump in with both feet.
So what kind of lessons did you learn from that?
I mean, that for sure. I mean, I shouldn't have piled so much money in without testing. Mm. It should have been I think this is the right thing. Let's put 500 quid in on day one and let's see what happens. And then we'll maybe look at day two and be very, very methodical and very, very cautious with it, particularly when the money was quite clearly going to be very tight. Mm. But the other part was just general financial control and overspending. Numbers isn't my forte. I mean, I'm good with numbers, but I don't like the detail. I don't want to go get all involved in all the nitty gritty. And I think sometimes avoiding that will cause you more pain. Unfortunately, as a business owner, you like to do the things you like to do, and you're like, so, well, I'm the boss, I can do what I like. But actually, there's certain things you've got to do, even if you don't like them. So I think, yeah, I learned that one the hard way.
I think observing yourself for many years, obviously working with you now, being partners, and from what you've explained in this very short, so far short interview, obviously you like to work at a peak performance, you like to be working at an optimum level. Do you ever feel like you're being dragged rather than living your life?
It's an interesting one. I think over the last year it's probably been very different. Kate Sweets is now 5 years old, and so the early part, you just like, it's relentless. You're just putting every hour on like you can find to just make it everything that it needs to be. You're doing everything, you're involved in everything, you've got to fix everything. Everything is your responsibility, and everything ends up coming back to you. But now we've got a team of 14 people that are running the business day to day. We've got sort of junior staff, we've got management, I've got a general manager. And now I've been able to step back a little bit. So this year I've done nothing but travel all year. And so dragged is probably wouldn't be the word that I use, but I'd be more reactive this year rather than proactive. And I don't think that's necessarily a positive. I think there's probably more I could have done this year, and things I'll probably do a bit different next year. But I won't cut back on the living. Now I've sort of got to a point where being able to live at my optimum level is a possibility. I won't go backwards from there. It's just a case of being more structured with the time that you do spend working. So yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, so, and what I mean by that is there's many business owners out there that will try and live a lifestyle that you live, but they haven't implemented the processes and the systems that you have. And God knows that I love a system and a process, you do, because I love the analysis. And I often get stuck in the analysis before I actually go, right, fuck it, I'm going to take the action, which you've told me many times, which we'll get onto. Mm. But yeah, you've taken that action, and now you've got to a point where you can actually reap the rewards. But there'll be people that will go and actually, you're just going on holiday. But it's taken you 5 years to get there.
Yeah.
And failures along the way.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've paid the price for everything that I have now. Like, it's taken everything out of me for a long time. I travel an awful lot now. It's a consequence of all the tough times. There's been times where I've literally... I remember there was one time, I can't remember what happened at the time, but I was sat on the bathroom floor, head in my hands, just like, I don't know how I'm going to fix this. For about half an hour, just broken, just no idea how we were going to fix it. That was probably in second or third year. And it's not the only time we've been in like a position where I'm just like, bloody hell, I've got nothing. I don't know where to go here.
Take me back to that time.
I can't remember the circumstances, but I was just, I felt very alone, very, very vulnerable, very unsure of what to do. Like, people talk about being a business owner as being quite a lonely thing, and I don't often resonate with that, but there are times for sure. Mm. I think I like working with other people, and so like working with my staff and stuff, or working with joint venture partners or whoever, or property owners. But there are certainly times where it's like, actually, this is all on me. Mm. I think years ago I heard that quote from Elon Musk, being an entrepreneur is like staring into the abyss and eating glass. The staring into the abyss thing is like knowing that at any moment this whole thing could collapse. And the eating glass bit is like, when you get to a certain level, you only get the worst bits. You only get to do the worst jobs. The worst problems end up with you. The easy problems get solved before they get to you. And I sort of, at the time, I didn't understand it. I was like, such a negative view. Mm-hmm. Now I do. And it's not that I view it in that sort of negativity, but that's the reality, is that as a business owner, you can always see the end. You can always see how, if we don't quite get these things right, or if we keep doing this thing, or we don't do enough of that thing, this whole thing's over. The party stops today. Mm. You can see that. But the reality is, you've got to make generally a bunch of mistakes, or a very big mistake, to screw it after a certain period of time.
Would you say that was your lowest point to date?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah. Like I say, I wish I could remember why it was so bad. I can't remember what the circumstances were. I blocked it out.
Yeah. it's stored away.
But yeah, I was just absolutely broken. I just didn't know where to turn. And I've been there a couple of times. Like when Night Games failed, I was not in a good place. And the thing that changed my mind, and it changed in like an hour. Like, it was like days of just like, oh, everything I've ever wanted is to like run my own business, and I can't bloody do it, and I've failed. And this was such a great thing. We had like 1,000+ people booked, and everybody lost their money, and I felt awful about that. I mean, they were each losing 30 or 40 quid. It wasn't going to change their lives, but to me, it still mattered. But at that point, I was then like, no, I'm going to do this. I'm going to embark on, what was it? I was going to change my job, I think. I was like, I'm going to get a new job, and I'm going to get a new car, and it's going to, like, this is going to be the new Rob. And as soon as I got that in my head, the whole thing changed, and I was like, right, I'm now driven again. Mm. So it was like, there was like a period of sort of despair and self-loathing and sort of just like feeling a bit sorry for myself. And then I had a new plan, and then I felt good again.
So what does drive Rob?
There's sort of two parts to it. I think with my career and the business and stuff, if I'm not driving somewhere, if I'm not aiming at something, if I've not got a target or something I'm trying to achieve, I can get really stagnant and really bored, really sort of disinterested. So I think from a career point of view, I've got to have like somewhere to drive to, a goal, a target. From a personal point of view, it's about excitement, it's about new things, it's about, which is why I travel so much, because I like to see different parts of the world, I like to explore new things. Give me the opportunity to do something silly, I probably will. I jump out of an aeroplane, I haven't done that yet, but...
I know it's on the bucket list.
Yeah, it's there. The plan is to do it in Dubai, over the Palm. I think that's the way to do it.
100%.
But like I was in... Zimbabwe and Zambia, and the bridge between the two, Victoria Falls, is like a massive, massive bungee jump. And I knew full well that like 2 years before, it had snapped, and a lady had ended up in the Zambezi with her legs tied together with Crocs and hippos. But I was like, they've probably got new ropes instead. Let's give it a go. That was very me. Like, just give me an opportunity to do something fun, and I generally will. And that's probably what keeps me motivated personally. A bit of a thrill seeker, I guess.
And we'll come back onto the other businesses as well. But you're quite the family man, because what a lot of people might not see is that you are quite the family man as well.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not with my wife anymore, but I spend a huge amount of time with my kids. I have them about half of the time, and I only work 4 days a week if I'm working. And every Wednesday I'll spend with the kids, and then every other weekend I spend with the kids. And so, yeah, we do all sorts of cool stuff. We were out last week on a Santa train, and next week, just after Christmas, we're going on a... what are we doing? Oh, we're going to like the Space Centre in the Midlands somewhere, and we're always doing cool stuff. I mean, they're 2 and 4, so like their sort of minds are just like wide open to do everything and anything. Yeah. Their ability is not always matching their expectations, but yeah, we keep trying, that's for sure.
Obviously, your, I suppose, work-life balance, a lot of people, including myself, still trying to figure out even if it is a thing, a work-life balance.
Yeah, no, it's bollocks.
What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I don't think you need to have balance. You need to have enjoyment.
Yeah.
I mean, like if you were to, I mean, being very literal, a balance would be 50-50.
Mm.
And so you would work half the time and live half the time, and that's not practical. There's got to be a sweet spot. There's got to be a, like, actually, I need to work 70% of the time to earn enough money.
Mm.
That's balance, if that's what your balance needs to be. But actually, if you don't need to or don't want to and are able to work less, fine. I think people are in a constant state of imbalance. Constantly, this week I've been like really good because I've done like finished at 5 every day and I've spent loads of time with my significant other or my kids or whatever. And then like the next week you're like, oh bugger, I've worked really late this week, so I've been bad. And it's like it's I don't think anybody has balance as such. I think it's life's not like that. Life's constantly like changing, and I think people often start to beat themselves up about something they can't control or that they're not going to be able to control. So, yeah, I think striving for balance, whatever balance is, yeah, I think it doesn't make as much sense as people think it does.
No, I agree. And obviously managing the sort of kids' expectations when running a business or multiple businesses as you do is a very tough, it's tough. It's a tough thing to do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what would your advice be? Mine would certainly be remain consistent as you possibly can, and don't try to, or don't overpromise. And that's one thing I'd sort of advise anyone to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's about being realistic and prioritizing what matters.
Yeah.
So like for me, Wednesdays I'm with my kids. Most of the time I'll ignore most things.
Mm.
My phone goes all day, every day. But unless it's something that I know is going to be important, if my general manager rings me, I answer because she knows that it'll get to bother me if it's important. Mm. But if property owners ring me, I ignore it. I ring them back later when the kids are gone to bed. If I get messages from people that I don't need to deal with at the time, they get ignored. I deal with them when they go to bed. But then equally, like from a work perspective, I've got enough that I could be working 18 hours a day. I choose not to. I choose to work on the most important things and either not do some things or delegate some things. And I think it was Warren Buffett that said that he attributes most of his success to saying no.
Mm.
He says no to like 98% of things or something, because he's got a very clear vision of this is what is important to me. Everything else is a no, because that's the important thing. And I think if you're not careful, you get dragged into so many other things, and like somebody wants you to do this and somebody wants you to do that and somebody wants this from you, and you're like, you can be a busy fool for everybody else's purposes. Mm. Whereas if you get very clear on your own purpose, like this is where my contribution comes from, this is how I have my impact on the world, my family, the kids, whatever it might be, this is how I have my impact, focus my time there. Yes, I need to do things for other people and perhaps do things I don't like at times, like admin and paying speeding fines or whatever. The sort of things that sit on my desk. But you've got to do those things, but you've got to focus and prioritise the things that really add value.
And the reason I ask that question is not a lot of people, or no one will know this, is that obviously when I spoke with you, when I initially broke up with the ex, I came to you, you offered the same advice but in a different way, just worded slightly differently. It was focus on what matters to you most. And when I implemented that, obviously I had some of my own service accommodation units, and I went, do you know what, I want to cut that branch off.
Yeah.
And then from that point, obviously you took over, we started working together closely, and from that I've obviously progressed my own portfolio significantly.
Yeah.
So you have to cut some branches off in order to plant a new tree and move forward.
It goes back to saying no. Say no to the things that aren't that important to you or aren't adding value.
Yeah. Massively. And it's, you've got to realise that you can't say yes to everything, because sometimes it's going to be harmful in the long run.
Yeah, it's very easy to be a yes man, isn't it? And I'm guilty of it plenty. Just going, yeah, I'll do that for you. I'll do that for you, because you know it's going to give the people, it's going to give people the answer they want. And saying no to people is sometimes uncomfortable. But I think it gets easier with practice. I think the more you get used to saying no and just saying, no, that's not a priority. It's like somebody was saying to me the other day, something on the lines of, this guy spends all his money on going out. I was like, so? That's clearly what he values. I've got a friend and he spends all his time and energy like socialising, dinners and drinks and travelling. And that's all he does outside of work, and he will compromise work if he needs to do that. Because that's his highest value. That's like spending time with other people and experiencing things and eating out, eating big food. That is what he gets the most joy from. So, what's the problem? And I think when you realize, I think most people do the same. I think your people spend their time and their money on the things they value most. Whether they're healthy or unhealthy is another matter. But it's that they value those things most.
I think a lot of people judge the people that do that, or they want to do it, but feel they will be judged, so they won't do it. That's what I'm seeing a lot of.
Yeah.
Is they will look at, for example, social media, Instagram, Facebook.
Yeah.
And they will be quick to judge, let's say yourself and me, for doing a podcast. Mm-hmm. And they say, oh, I'd love to do that. I don't have the funds. Mm-hmm. Bullshit.
Yeah.
You can get the funds. You can start that. And that's just my own opinion. I'm very blunt and direct to the point. If you wanted to do it, you could.
Yeah, completely agree. I know you see a lot of people that have those sorts of limiting beliefs where they're like, I couldn't, I can't afford it, I haven't got the time. You could if you chose to. If it was important, you would.
Yeah.
I couldn't start a business, I've got no money. Well, that's clearly bollocks.
Yeah.
People clearly don't. I spent almost nothing opening my business, as you know.
Yeah.
I think it's 50 quid to start a business that now turns over, I don't know, 3 million a year, which is bonkers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can't and should, and should and shouldn't are the words that really annoy me. If people say I can't, well, you fucking could. Should says who? Should says who? Or shouldn't says who? I think people are very quick to have an opinion about what is right and wrong without any real basis. It's quite dangerous.
Absolutely. And it brings me nicely on to the fact of where you started your property journey, because it wasn't as easy as you make out.
No. The highlight really makes it sound very simple.
Yeah.
it wasn't. So I started in a strange old way. And actually, I wouldn't be here if I'd have gone out for drinks one night. It's really interesting how small decisions that you make have massive impacts. Mm. So I was looking at sort of very beginning, I guess. I was back at Abercrombie and Kent, back doing that after Night Games failed. And I was thinking, when I've got a bit of money, I should probably invest in property. It's probably a good idea. Probably set myself up and have a bit of a pension pot. That's what I should do. And I read loads, and I'm always fascinated and like to understand how different businesses work, and anything that makes any sort of money, I'm interested in reading about, basically. Or anything business related, management, sales, motivation, or whatever. And so I thought, I'll read some property books. I thought, that's a good idea. Let's get some knowledge in. And then when I've got the money, I'll be ready, rather than sort of having the money and not knowing what to do with it. Mm. And then, as many people do, you discover this sort of no money down option. You don't need any money to get into property, because theoretically other people have money, or you can structure creative deals where you don't need to put any money in or any of your own money in. I was like, ooh, actually, what am I waiting for? So I was reading loads of different books, and I got really into it. I was like, right, I'm going to find my niche. I'm going to find a way to make this work. And I got invited by Liam Ryan down to one of his events right in the very early days of Assets for Life. And as it happened, I actually met one of his mentees at a networking event shortly before. So I knew that that was the end product, like the that it was like a mastermind, an annual mastermind. And so I went down to the event, but I nearly didn't. I nearly didn't go because I got invited to go out the night before. And I thought, if I go out, I'm not making that 6 o'clock bus down to London. And I was like, do I go or don't I go? And it was on a knife edge. And I was like, no, I'm going to go down to London. I'm going to go and see about this property thing. Yeah, if I'd gone out for drinks that night, we probably wouldn't be sat here. It's quite a mental thing.
And then five years later, you're running a sort of a £3 million a year business.
Yeah.
So how many properties are you turning over now? Because obviously, for people that don't know, you didn't start in service accommodation.
No, exactly.
Even with your background in sort of hospitality.
Yeah, sometimes you can't see the wood for the trees, can you? So I started and I was like, right, I'm going to do HMOs. That's my thing because I understand it. I've lived in HMOs before. You can see how there's a lot of money to be made there. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go and buy some HMOs. My local market isn't, or wasn't at the time, I don't know about now, but wasn't particularly good for HMOs. Like they didn't really stack up that well. And so that was a waste of time. And then at the same time, whilst I was doing that, I was like, but I could probably do some little developments as well. I could do like some, buy an office block and convert into apartments or buy like a bit of land. And turns out all the commercial agents, land agents, work Monday to Friday, 9 till 5, as did I. So that was a non-starter. And so I was messing around trying to do all sorts of things that clearly weren't going to work for one reason or another. For about 3 or 4 months, and I sat down with Liam and I went, Liam, this property shit doesn't work. he was like, it does. Let's have a look at the options again. And we put all the strategies down in front of us, and he was like, Rob, why aren't you doing service accommodation again? Like, that is your background. Travel is your thing. You know about it. You've always done it. Remind me why you're not doing it. I was like, not sure. Let's do that. So within 3 or 4 weeks, we picked up the keys for the first unit. The mentors there were brilliant. They sort of give me everything I needed, and I took a different approach with that because I think before I'd been like trying to learn everything about everything, and by that point I was getting a bit impatient, and the impatience actually taught me a really interesting lesson of like, don't worry about like the plans down the road. Like right now we've got processes we're building, videos we're recording, and things like that to make the systems better. Mm. I could have started thinking about that 5 years ago, and that would have been a waste of my fucking time. Mm. Whereas at the time, what I thought was, all I need to worry about is getting my hands on some keys. Mm. I should find a property. That's all I'm thinking about. Let's do that. Then we'll worry about furnishing it. Then we'll worry about marketing it. Then we'll worry about operating it. Then we'll worry about optimizing and growing the business forward. And by chunking it down and just being very sort of narrow-minded about it and sort of like tunnel vision, like this is all I care about, just get the property, just furnish it, just market it, it became much, much easier. And I think a lot of people would benefit from doing the same. I see so many people, like when I'm working with mentees, either like privately or at academies, they're like, yeah, but I haven't like figured this out, I haven't figured that out. And I'm like, oh, you don't need to, just get a bloody property.
Yeah.
Or like just think of a company name, it doesn't matter, it hasn't got to be perfect. Just pick one, get it registered, get yourself a bank account, like get those bits done, then you can get a property, then you can do this bit. And I'm like, yeah, but like what happens if like we have a guest and then like they lose the keys? I was like, you haven't got a property. There's no keys to lose, you know. So I think by breaking it down, that made it much easier. And so, yeah, like I say, within 3 or 4 weeks, maybe 5 weeks, we had the first set of keys, and it was onwards and upwards from there.
So, how many lessons did you learn from the initial unit that you took on? Or what was your most valuable lesson that you learned? I mean, because we're probably going to be the same.
I couldn't even tell you.
Probably cleaners.
Yeah, I mean, cleaners are always they're the best and worst part of service accommodation. You get it right, you get the people that that do a good job, that care, that understand the business. Life's a dream. If you don't, and it's so easy not to, if you don't, life's hell. Yeah. We're always recruiting cleaners somewhere. I mean, obviously now I own a cleaning company as well. I sort of see both sides of the coin. And I'm always recruiting. There's always a cleaner somewhere that's not performing.
Yeah.
But that's a nature of scale,
yeah,
and the way we've scaled it. I was given some very strong advice to stay in one area. Say, right, own your area, stay in one area. You've got one set of operations. It's going to be so much simpler, so much more simple. And I went, no, bollocks to that, because it's going to slow down my growth. I was like, I'm going, you got a unit anywhere, I will manage it. And I still do. And we'll still open up a brand new city for one two-bedroom apartment. And still people think we're crazy, but it's what worked for us. And we've obviously built systems around that. We built systems to be able to handle, I don't know, we're about 25 towns and cities now. So we can manage all of those different things because we've had to.
Mm.
Whereas I think some people I've seen people open a second location, so they've got one place, one city, somewhere another like 2 hours away, and it just, because their whole system and operation, their mindset's all based around being in one place and being able to pop out and fix things if you need to. That transition to then a remote model or a second city just is really, really difficult.
Oh, it's tough. I mean, I've got up to, it's 23 units. I mean, I took on 60 at one go and gave it straight back because that was too much. That was in Bedford, and I thought, no. I mean, I spoke to you about that. I was like, yeah, take it back.
Yeah.
But then we got up to about 23. And they were, again, as you know, dotted all over.
Yeah, yeah, but, of course they were. Yeah.
I mean, what are you sitting at now? How many units have you got? So it's got to be over 100 now.
Yeah, a little over 100, I would say, between what we've got active and what we've got being set up. Yeah, 110 maybe. We've got a few that are sort of coming in the new year. So yeah, we've got a fair few. So we haven't grown as much as I hoped this year, actually. Up until now, we've doubled every year. And this year we haven't, for a mixture of reasons. I think, obviously, this year's been a funny old year. We started with Omicron was this year.
Yeah,
like it seems like that was a long time ago, but yeah, that was this year. And then we've got cost of living, and we've had, obviously, most recently all this disruption with strikes and stuff, and I think that's really affecting things, and the weather, and there's been every number of reasons. I mean, obviously international travels have come back and come back really strong this year. So there's all sorts of excuses. We could have found a way. I was too busy travelling. So we'll grow a bit quicker next year.
Is it something I want to touch on that I can certainly resonate with? You touched on something you said in a build-up to that. Making enough money that I don't know what to do with. When is it ever enough?
I've sort of got the opposite problem at the moment. I've got everything I ever wanted. And now I'm sort of like, what now? And so I've been doing a lot of work recently on like, well, what now? Because not that I've got all the money in the world and I'm like rolling in it, because I'm really not. I'm very comfortable, but I've sort of achieved all the things I wanted to achieve. And now, what happens if you don't have a next thing? You can end up feeling quite stagnant and quite bored, which I've definitely been in parts of this year. I've been a bit like, what now? Mm. So I've spent a lot of time this year sort of just figuring that out again, like, where are we going to go next? Like, what do we want to do? Because without that, I start to feel quite unfulfilled if I haven't got a target. As I mentioned earlier, like, career-wise, I need something to drive towards. Otherwise, I get a bit bored.
Do you think it's important for you to set a goal then?
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Got to have a goal, got to have a reward attached to it.
Do you think if you didn't set the goal, you wouldn't feel unfulfilled? And the reason I say that is because if I don't have the goal in mind, I think it's important to have an objective, but not a goal.
Okay.
Because if you hit the goal, you've then got to have another one. However, if I have an objective, it's slightly different. That's okay. The way I've framed it.
More of a reason than an end result.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And you can always, the objective may change slightly.
Yeah.
And obviously your objective may be personal or obviously framed in a business sense.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I can absolutely see that. For me, if I haven't got something like that, something in the future where there's some work to be done to get there, like, if I haven't got something I'm striving for, then I can get bored.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I can see that. I'm very much the same with that. However, what I would say, I mean, with myself, I could quite happily sit in my own, or sit in silence, for example. I could sit in my own, for example, studio, wherever it may be, but it wouldn't be for long. I'd have to create something. I like to create situations and go, right, we need to monetize this in a certain way.
Yeah.
I think it's just the way we're created. We can't sit still. Yeah. I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, absolutely not. I think as long as you know that, as long as you're aware of it.
Yeah.
I speak to people regularly about self-awareness, and I think it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Because often, like you see people that have got no self-awareness, and like they don't see the things that are that they're doing or why they're doing them. But the opposite is you see the things, but if you don't understand why it's happening, or you don't understand what to do about it, that's equally frustrating. So you're very aware of the problem, but no idea how to fix it.
Did it ever have an impact on your relationships being that way?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, because like my ex-wife and I was always cancelling like personal plans or adjusting schedules. Like, I'm going to be a bit late. Actually, I'm going to have to go and do this. Work always came first. Mm-hmm. And that was fine to a point. Like, she was happy with that. She understood that. We were in it together. But certainly it put more pressure on her. Mm. Yeah, 100%. And whilst there wasn't a resentment, I'm sure there was some frustration from time to time.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, with myself, exactly the same. It was the relentlessness to get to where I needed to go, and I would put that first no matter what. It didn't matter what was in the way.
Yeah.
I had the objective to get to a certain amount of properties. We've done it. What now?
Yeah.
And then you promise the world, and you go, yeah, but I want to do that next. And you move on to the other thing, and it's, again, it leads nicely into this question. What was your biggest regret?
Oof, biggest regret? Actually, yeah, I know exactly what it is. My biggest regret is not taking a gap year. When I was working in the coach place, a couple of people did, and I was like, I would love to do that. But I didn't, because I didn't think I'd be able to come back to the career I had, which is such nonsense. If you leave a job on good terms to go travelling and you get back, there's every chance they're going to let you back in. Maybe not in the same role, but if you're good, you're going to climb back up again.
Mm.
That was a mistake for sure. I mean, I'm trying to make up for it now. I'm trying to catch up.
Yeah, I suppose you can get the business to a point where you do have a sort of gap here, but you'll always have it in the back of your mind, right? What if I'm needed?
Yeah, I mean, thankfully now we live in an age where you don't need to be anywhere in particular.
No.
I mean, I literally run my business from all over the world, airports, beaches, aeroplanes these days. Like, you've got Wi-Fi on aeroplanes. Like, just because you're at 37,000 feet, it doesn't mean you can't still run your business. So I think these days, I think you can do all those things. The difference I have now is that with two kids, I can't get away for very long at any given time.
No.
I've sort of 5 days every other week that I can travel, and so I usually do. But I can't go for 2 weeks very easily. And I certainly can't go for a year. But yeah, that's probably my biggest regret, actually. I don't regret very many things, but yeah.
Do you find it harder running a business with kids?
Now, no. Before, yes. Yeah. Well, as it was building, because I had to dedicate all my time to it, yeah, I couldn't have done that in the position I'm in now, where I've got my kids half the time and I'm the only person that's looking after them during that period. I couldn't possibly. But now I've got a great team. They're there to support me. They come to me when they've got problems, and I generally point them in the right direction. I don't need to be in front of a laptop, sat at a desk very often.
And again, the reason I ask that is because there's a lot of people that come to myself, and I'm sure they come to you, is, can I get started in property? What are the steps I need to take? Well, Rob's demonstrated that what you need to do is stop overthinking. You need to take the action. However, these are the steps you need to take in order to get you to where you need to be. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these people are single parents.
Yep.
They don't have a lot of funds that are reaching out to myself, and probably likewise yourself. But you also need to be aware and have a lot of self-awareness of what you want to achieve. And do you actually want to get started? Because there's going to be some fucking hard work and sacrifice along the way.
Yeah, I think there are certainly a good number of people that like the idea of it.
Yeah.
But the reality is quite a different thing. And I think I might be wrong, but I suspect that a big number of those, you know, those stats about 90% of businesses fail in the first 5 years or whatever it is, or maybe 80%. But I suspect a lot of that is people giving up. A lot of it's, I believe that the facts are, a lot of it is due to finances, but I think, I mean, you see businesses that are in dire straits financially and they fight their way out and they're like a phoenix from the ashes. Like you hear the story of like Elon Musk putting all of every penny he had into the two companies because they were both, and his expectation was that both would fail. He was like, there's a very good chance both will fail. I'm putting everything in, I'm going to sleep on a mate's sofa.
Well, he actually said they were his babies. He's like, I'm not going to cut both of them off. So if they one of them goes, they both go.
Yeah. And so I think there's an element of, an element of that really, where you sort of got that thing where people will often give up. But if you're willing to put the work in, if you're willing to really dig deep and just give it everything and not accept failure, then it can be done. But the people that approach this as I quite like the idea of that. I quite like they might look at my Facebook feed and go, look, 5 years and I could be traveling the world all the time. And like, it's so easy to think that would be nice without seeing all the heartache and pain and stress and work and struggles and challenges that you have, all those things that ultimately really actually built the business. And not everybody's ready for that. It's not sexy, so people don't talk about it.
No.
If you go to a training, like a seminar where they're selling training courses, they don't mention any of that stuff.
And this is what this platform's for. I mean, stress you just mentioned there. Do you suffer, or have you ever suffered with anxiety at all?
Anxiety, no. Stress, at times. These days, not much. Usually, no. In fact, no, that's unfair. Stress, I definitely still get stressed, but it's generally quite small bursts. And so it'd be like, oh, everything's piling up on me. Like, I don't know what to do. I'm like, oh, there's so many things to fix. But I'm quite good at just being quite rational about it and going, well, actually, all these things, they can wait. We'll do these two things because they're important. I'll deal with them now. They can wait. And I will be quite compartmentalized and just go, like, that is now not my problem. So I think that's really helped me. But yeah, I get stressed from time to time.
I can second what you've just said, and that's what you've given me that. You've echoed that with myself, and I've been able to implement that process as well into my daily routine whenever things get on top for me. So anyone that's listening, I would definitely reach in or get in touch with Rob because I definitely implemented that with myself. So, I mean, what's been the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Received so much.
That's why I want to bring it out.
Yeah. Getting it down to one. Oh, you really put me on the spot here. I've got nothing for you. I couldn't think of no, I haven't got one. I haven't got a best. I think there's so much. There's so much advice out there. Some of it's good, some of it's bad. I haven't got anything that stands out.
So. Why do you do what you do?
I certainly do it for the... I mean, for me, my life is about my life. Like, the whole point of sort of living is to live, right? Like, it's mandatory to, to be alive, but it's not mandatory to live. The way I see it is like you can go out and you can go and explore and like spend time with friends and build relationships and try new things and like travel the world, really important to me. Like spend time with my kids, like all those things. That's living for me. The business supports that, but at the same time, I get immense joy from seeing the business do what it does and seeing happy customers and like... I was with my staff a couple of weeks ago in the Philippines. So we got all 14 members of staff and me in the Philippines for the weekend. We all flew to an island that they called the Ibiza of the Philippines, my staff. It's not quite, but it was very good and it was beautiful. And like white sandy beaches, and there was a couple of cool clubs and stuff and loads of water sports. And like my staff had the most amazing time. And on the way back, so... some of them came in by boat, and some flew from different islands, and some flew via Manila. My property manager, or my head of property management, was flying via Manila back home, but she loves volleyball. She's watched it on TV for years and years and years, but she's never been able to go to a game. And there happened to be one the day after she was in Manila. She said, "Rob, would you mind if I booked my flight home from Manila a day later and stayed to watch the volleyball?" I was like, "Yeah, sure, why not?" And then I asked her how it was, and she said, "Rob, I nearly cried. It was the most amazing thing. I'll never forget it. It was just, it meant the absolute world to her. And I didn't realise that that's what I was doing when I went, yeah, sure." And like, it's things like that, things like being able to positively impact people's lives. One of my members of staff had a real health problem in the family, and they need some help financially, and I was able to, and that was such a wholesome thing. Obviously, I didn't do it to feel good, but I felt bloody good when I did it. And it's just nice to be able to not just create a life for me, but also create opportunities for other people as well. That's why I do it.
Good. And that leads me on to my next question is, well, you kind of answered it in that, to be honest, and which is, what for you is a life well lived?
I think the key part is that it is in that question is for you. I mean, for me, it's probably different to other people, but for me, I think if I was to die with two children that had grown up to be decent people, that I'd helped shape and helped support, and that they've gone on to become decent people, and equally I felt like I'd not left any sort of stone unturned from an experiential point of view or a travel point of view or whatever, that would be me happy. I feel like I want to be and see and do and have and try everything. That's what my life is about. And if I've given that a bloody good go, yeah, I'm pretty pleased with that.
Wicked. And what would you say the happiest moment of your life has been so far?
I mean, the birth of my kids was obviously, they were big ones. It's probably that. It's so cliche, but it's so true.
I mean, it is for most parents out there. It's going to be.
Well,
certainly for me, it was.
It's the last time I cried, both times. Could not be better than that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had lots of very happy times and cool experiences and times where I've been euphoric for whatever reason, but nothing comes close to that.
Mm-hmm. And I always ask this question at the end. I always close it off with this question is, Rob, how are you doing?
How am I doing? I'm generally pretty good. Yeah, generally pretty good. I think I've got, and I think that's, again, it's an important point for people at home. I think, like, you can look from an outside looking in and see, like my Facebook, like, world makes it look like it's all, like, gravy all the time. Everything's cool, and I can sort of, I'm having such a good time. But equally, there's a lot of stress that comes with it, and things going wrong, and staff to deal with, and relationship problems or friend issues or financial problems or problems with the business or whatever. Like, there's all sorts of things that can happen. I'm pretty good. There's always room for more. I can always see room for improvement. And maybe that's a never satisfied type thing. But yeah, pretty good.
Rob, you've been amazing. Thank you very much for coming on. Where can people find you?
Best place to find me is either Facebook or via my website, ksweets.co.uk.
Thank you very much, mate.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Connect You podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share this on your socials, tag me, and leave a review.